Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Tuesday, October 5th. Going to be with you for the next hour or so. Got a lot to catch up on. Thank you so much for, you know, you guys always just being there over the past 14 and a half years. We did take a vacation. I almost felt guilty not being part of the regular routine. That's been our thing daily for a while. And then Mondays and Thursdays, I honestly felt guilty not doing a show last Thursday. And then here we are coming in a day late. But, you know, we did want to just decompress right around the time of our birthdays, and we did it. So when we come back in 10 seconds, we will discuss the latest UFC fight card with Thiago Santos and Johnny Walker at the top of the billing. And then we'll talk about the latest Bellator card. Bellator was 267, that I know. Michael Venom Page, who fought Douglas Lima. We'll talk about that one. The UFC one, man, don't quote me on that one. They got the fight night thing going, whatever. Sometimes it's just easier to remember the headliners. Plus, be prepared for some mic rust. It's going to be tough, but we're going to get through it, and then we're going to be seamless throughout the rest of the year because we ain't taking no more time off. So look, let's just bulldoze through the results, and then we'll talk about the big stuff that came from the results, along with some of the latest news. There's a lot out there, and there's a lot that I want to chime in on. I'm sure there's a lot that Goes wants to chime in on. So over at Bellator 267, Michael Venom Page defeated Douglas Lima. They fought before, if you'll recall, and Douglas Lima gave Michael Page his only loss. Now they're even, except it was close for Michael Page via split decision there. Douglas Lima's already saying, man, I really thought I won it. A lot of the fans are saying none of us won because we were expecting a little bit more from that fight, and we didn't get it. But these things happen in MMA. Unfortunately for Page, who hasn't always fought the highest level of competition, when he's had these high-profile fights, like the two Lima fights and Paul Daly, well, in one of them, he got knocked out. And then the other two, they just weren't as exciting as he can be when he's just icing folks in some of his other fights. And Leah McCourt defeated Jessica Borga. Now, some of you may be saying, well, that's not one of the bigger fights. It is. Leah McCourt is a ranked fighter at 145 pounds in the USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie ranking. So I had to definitely take a look. From then on down, of course, there was a step down, but I'm talking about some of the ranked fighters over at Bellator. These two were what I really, really had my eye on. She got another win. She goes now to 6 in a row, taking her to 6-1. So that's impressive. And, you know, 145 pounds isn't the deepest division, but she is a ranked fighter. So congratulations to Leah McCourt and Michael Page. Goes, anything on those?
Yeah, man. I mean, I think you said it perfectly. The interest is there. Douglas Lima is a great fighter, and MVP has a lot of potential. But when you sit down and you watch it and you got your popcorn and your beer, you're just not entertained. And on top of that, you get what I felt was a bad decision. I mean, I thought it was close, but I thought Douglas Lima won that fight as well. I just have a problem with MVP being the guy that he is and having the skills that he has. It does seem like he's made some improvements here and there, but he just looks like if the CompuBox number said one strike to zero, he would be okay winning a fight like that. It's just not entertaining. You know, that's fine. Go ahead, win the fights like that. But I don't know that a lot of people are going to want to tune in if that keeps happening.
Correct. And what sucks is he kind of oozes his own type of charisma. He gets it done in other fights. He's had some memorable and violent moments. Almost everything you can ask for. But then when you ask the question, well, how would he do against some of the better ones? Could he really, really compete for a title, whether it was Lima, whether it was McDonald, whether it's now Amosov? You don't know because, you know, he's either lost or barely won, and that's not a bad thing to barely win. But I think Bellator and a lot of fans were kind of looking for something like what AJ McKee did. They brought him along very slowly. You know, I disagree with how slowly they bring him along sometimes, but they do. But when it was time to shine, he shined in that whole tournament. It was 16 fighters. He had to fight 4 times, and none brighter than the win over Pitbull himself. And that's why right now AJ McKee is an actual superstar for Bellator. Some are saying maybe the best fighter Bellator's ever had. And I bet you along with that will come great opportunities, you know, outside the Bellator cage as well. And I think that that's probably a fair comparison of what is expected out of Michael Venom Page, and he hasn't met it. I mean, he's still 20-1. I feel ridiculous saying this. So he's as successful, but one guy's wearing a strap, the other guy isn't. And one guy is getting talked about, you know, a lot as being an exciting fighter, and the other one isn't always. So I think there's something for Venom Page to look at in AJ McKee and figure out if he can kind of get there.
It bothered me a little bit, the performance, but also when he was put on his back, he just didn't really have much of an answer for what was going on. I think he's progressed too far in his career to look that way. You know, Israel Adesanya, you could tell when he got put on his back, like at least there were a couple, like you feel like he got a little better. There's some adjustments there. There's something going on in his head. MVP was just sort of like in survival mode. And I didn't really like that for where we're at. I mean, a lot of us criticize how long it's taken to groom him and get him to a point, but I don't know that a lot has been done in that time frame.
You only should survive if you've been knocked down and your brain's rattled and you got to collect yourself. Or maybe it's the end of the round and let's say you've won the round for most of it, and you've gotten taken down, and what you don't want is for someone to just posture up and maybe explode for 10, 15 seconds and steal the round. But other than that, in my opinion, especially if you're a striker, you should be looking to get up. If you're a grappler, then there's a lot of sweeps or submission attempts that you should go through before you attempt to get up. But it seems like what the judges don't want is stalling or holding on. Well, I guess it's almost the same thing. You know, they want to see action, and they really want to focus in on damage. So if you're good from the bottom with elbows or something, go for it. Let's see what you can do. But in my opinion, you should be getting your back to that cage as soon as possible, mitigating the damage from up top, and just getting back to your feet. And I'm sure he would say, no one can strike with me in the whole world in my division at Bellator. So then get to your feet.
Mm-hmm. He landed that nice right hand quite a few times. But yeah, he was just really reluctant to strike. And even then, like, you could almost say the same thing about Douglas Lima. Like, Douglas Lima probably could have put his foot on the gas a little bit more. I thought it was crazy that for a second there, it looked like we were going to get the same finish we got last time. Like, that came close to just happening exactly the same. But overall, for the excitement that you're supposed to have for that type of fight, it didn't deliver.
That's a little bit of my letdown. So people discussing who won, I was just like, well, we didn't win, you know, like, and I think a lot had to do with Santos and Walker the next day. So I'll pivot to that. I'm telling you guys, for both fights, I was on the edge of my seat, like literally. So you know how you clasp your hands together, you take that final drink of water, beer, whiskey, whatever it is, and then you kind of just throw your phone, you know, throw it like a few feet away from you. You don't want anyone to bug you, text you, nothing. And then you go, here, kind of like what Mike Goldberg used to say, here we go. You either say it or you mentally think it, you know. And then the fight starts playing out, and then it's kind of slow, but you're still on the edge of your seat. You don't want to look at your phone. You don't want to look at anyone in the room, because that's when you miss the KO, you know. And in both fights, I started on the edge of my seat, and then I started kind of like, you know, cracking my neck, shaking out my arms, kind of like, what the hell, you know, and just, okay, what are the adjustments in between rounds? And then the second round, a little bit of the same, and maybe they start to pick it up or whatever, but slowly goes, they start receding into the couch, and then you kick the legs up, and then you just start enjoying the fight like any other, you know. But it's not main event quality that they're giving you. They become chess players. It bums me out, man, because if you can actually do something pretty special when you're a main event at a Bellator or a UFC, that's your chance to gain Instagram followers, title contention talk. Sometimes Bellator will bring you and say, hey, we want to make you part of the panel with Jen Brown and Josh Thompson. You know, they'll feature a fighter whose fight's coming up, you know, or with the UFC, they'll maybe put them on that purple couch or something. Those are big, big moments. You have to rise to the occasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just didn't happen. I mean, that main event, I was with a group of people watching it. We were playing a game that I think you're really going to like, where you pick the rounds and all that. And it was the final pot. It was really big. And me and another person got first round KO. You know, as long as the fight ended in the first round, no matter what it was, I thought I had the best pick possible. The first round, they hardly even threw a strike, man. I couldn't believe it. That's so out of character for both guys.
Yeah.
But that's happened before. Like, if you look at Lawler and McDonald, it was actually kind of a slow fight until it started to heat up, right?
Yeah.
We kept saying, hey, the second one of them lands a good shot, that wall's just going to break down and it's going to turn into a crazy fight. It just wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. And it was so weird because there was – such a lack of action, and it was so out of a character that it was almost like we weren't even scoring the fight anymore. We were just waiting for something to happen. Like, we didn't even care anymore about a decision or who. I had to actually go back and watch it again to figure out what rounds actually went where. But yeah, that's just when it's main event time, you just can't do that, man.
They should have felt. So Thiago Santos won, folks. He won a unanimous decision, 48-47 on all the judges' scorecards. But what I was going to say was, I think both guys should have felt the pressure of, hey, if I'm going to be a contender, or in the case of Santos, a contender again, I got to do something. You know, I got to shake off this losing streak that I'm on. And for Walker, you know, same thing. He's blasted a few fools, but he's also come up short in some of his fights. So he's got to show everyone that he can get to a contender status. So I was hoping they would both feel the pressure to perform and prove who they are rather than not to lose. I was watching two fighters who didn't want to lose. In the case of Santos, I think he was really conserving his energy. And he showed he can go five. But Greg, guess what? You just took a loss. And I don't know that a lot of people are wanting to see you in a main event again, you know. And he came out guns a-blazing. His walkout was fun and entertaining. You know, he was goofing around. For some reason, I just thought, you know, I had this feeling like, hey, I've been gone a while, but watch this. And I didn't get it.
Mm-hmm. With Santos, I'm going to give him a pass just because he has put on some pretty crazy fights before. This is probably the first one I think we can look at in this position and say, hey, he shit the bed. But for the most part, he's done pretty well. So I'll give him this pass. But if it continues, then yeah, it's just going to be rough. When there's pay-per-view and you see that name, you're going to be like, oh, man, I just don't want to be duped again. But I am willing to give him this particular pass with everything he's been through with the knees and all that. Okay, you got me this one time, but I hope it doesn't happen again.
See, I thought that should have happened with Rakic, you know, the pass. Like, well, you didn't win, but he's coming off the knees after John Jones, and then he lost to Glover Teixeira. Oh, but Glover's fighting for a title. He's won like four or five in a row. That's a monster. Okay, but with Rakic, it was time for him to respond again. Because remember, he took Jones to a split decision. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, I'm one of the best in the world, and we're actually behind him. Well, hell yeah, he is. You know, some people may have even had him winning. Who knows? And on two bad knees. So I felt like I gave him that pass the last fight. More than anything, I guess, in the end, he shouldn't give himself that pass. He's now 37. You know, he's now 37. His family is going to be growing very soon as his companion, you know, Yana Kunitskaya. I guess it's his wife now. She's having a baby. So I'm not saying they're winding down their careers, but, you know, I don't know if she's going to continue right away. You know, not many fighters come back and continue right away. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. He did get two paychecks. That's important. But I think that Thiago Santos, that I've gotten to know at Extreme Couture a little bit, he wants to compete for a world title, not just collect a win, you know, your show money and your win bonus. And to do that, I think you just got to do spectacular stuff. Now, I get it. He used to be a middleweight, and he's fighting a guy that's 6'6", who actually looks like he could grow into a middleweight, or sorry, a heavyweight. So it could even be maybe a size thing or whatever, but I guess he got his hand raised. He moves on. But I really like Thiago Santos, and I wanted him to get back to that spot where he was competing for a world title. Here's the last thing I'll say about it. The last loss that Jan Blachowicz took before he won five in a row, including the world title and including the title defense against Israel Adesanya, that was Thiago Santos. So he's got this ace up his sleeve that he can play at some point if he can get a few wins in a row. Hey, I beat the champ, you know? And a lot of times the champ wants to correct that. So we'll see. But again, you know, the clock's ticking a little bit in the age department, and that fight was just, I don't know. You know, for me, that's my personal taste. What are you going to do? All right, so Thiago Santos, go ahead.
No, I feel you. That's true.
Thiago Santos got that win over Johnny Walker. Kevin Holland and Kyle Daukaus. That fight was ruled a no contest, and the reason is because, so this fight only won one round, and early in the first round, this fight ended as the fourth minute was winding down. But earlier in the fight, their heads collided, and it wasn't the traditional kind of forehead to forehead or the upper part of the head with the upper part of the head. Actually, it was Daukaus's top of his head with Kevin Holland's jaw. So Kevin Holland actually took a knockdown blow, I guess we should say. And he did get knocked down, and Daukaus then proceeds to get on top and start to, you know, follow up and maul him a little bit with the ground and pound and submission attempts. And in that process, Kevin Holland is defending. I think a lot of it is just on instinct, because when I saw him get knocked down, his head bounced off the floor, and it looked like that may have woken him up. And so the fight continues about another minute or so. We eventually get the submission, and that's that. Now, in the middle of the fight, you see Dan Mergliotta make this motion, like, get the replay ready, because there's a sequence here, you know, that I'm not sure about. And if you watch Dan Mergliotta, he kind of had to jump around a little bit in his positioning because of the way the fight went. So if that fight had possibly ended at that particular moment with him hitting the ground based off that headbutt, I don't think people would be bitching as much. But because Mergliotta let it play out a little bit, people were like, well, wait a minute. He came back. He was fighting. What's the problem? You know, because if Kevin Holland comes back and wins, then I don't think anyone's saying anything. But the referees took their time to discuss it. The UFC officials approached the commission, their discussion. I wasn't a big fan of that, to tell you the truth. Maybe we'll talk about that in a sec. But eventually, they used replay to determine it was a no contest. It looked like Mergliotta wanted to give Daukaus the win. I could hear him saying, well, I was going to stop it, but then I saw Kevin Holland fighting back immediately. And then Herb Dean pulled him aside and said, you know, the safest thing you could probably do is rule this a no contest, because I guess nobody gets hurt in terms of win or loss or their money, you know, which is a good question. How does the money get figured out? I guess, does it go down as a draw, or do both guys get something? I don't know. But no one takes a loss. What did you think about that, man? I mean, did you have a chance to like really, really unpack it all?
Yeah, I didn't like it. As it was playing out, I had just assumed that Mergliotta didn't see what happened. What made it confusing was when they were talking that he said, I did see it happen. I just thought he fought through it. which that to me sounded strange, because if he saw him the way we saw him, with his eyes rolled back into his head and his face just hitting the mat like that, I thought that's when you step in right at that moment and you just stop the action. Right. So to let it play out, but then go back to what your initial thought was, that to me doesn't really make much sense. And then I agree with you on the outside. I don't understand why matchmakers need to be involved in that conversation. There was too many heads there. That was really odd. It's just not a good look. Like, whatever the commission decides at that moment, they can just go back and tell everyone later. Right. Those people don't need to be involved in there, because their opinion is going to sway people. So that whole thing was just sort of a mess. And yeah, I mean, I guess they're going to rebook it and do it again, but it really was unfortunate, because Kevin Holland took a knockout. You know, he's got to rest his head for a while now, I think.
Yeah, and so to take it a little further, it was Mark Ratner and Sean Shelby that were kind of on the outside looking in, but also speaking at times. Not much. It was more of a commission discussion. And I say this with the utmost respect for both guys, because both guys have been in the game for a long time. But what I'm saying is, it's probably not a good look when you have so many fans that are always of the belief that some think fights are fixed. Some think there's a conspiracy for the UFC to take fights in a general direction, you know, maybe a fighter's career. Some get shelved, some get this, some get that. Dana White has always said, once they weigh in, they're out of my hands and they're in the hands of the commission. I can't control anything. The results are what they are, you know, and that's the way it should be. The promoter is the promoter, and the commission runs the show on Saturday night, we'll call it. Most of the times, fight night's on Saturday night. So when Mark Ratner can discuss this is when there's no regulatory body, and that's usually when they're overseas, because every state is sanctioned now for mixed martial arts competition. So when you're overseas in a territory where there's not a commission, then the UFC acts as its own commission, and they brought in Mark Ratner in the past to be basically the commissioner. And the reason no one's ever batted an eye is the reason Mark Ratner's in the Hall of Fame, because he's credible. He was in the Nevada State Athletic Commission for many years, and he ran that outfit for many years. First, he was a deputy, and then he became the executive director. And so when you build up that reputation, it carries weight. And that's why no one's ever had a problem that I know of when Mark Ratner has acted as the commissioner, as the one that makes the decisions overseas. So perhaps him coming over just to listen, because every once in a while they put a microphone on him and then they have him explain what happened. I don't have a problem with that. I don't even have a problem with him speaking up if he's asking a question as to what they're deciding, so he can relay that to the broadcast. If they bring him in, that's fine. But his opinion towards what should happen in the fight in a state like Nevada, I don't think that's something that should happen. And then Sean Shelby, even less. Why? Because you don't want them to, you don't want anyone to ever think, and I'm not accusing them of this by no means, but many people would, oh, he probably wants Holland to lose because Holland's a free agent and he's asking for a lot of money, or he wants Dawkins to lose. You know, it's easier to say Holland because I think Holland's had more success, so he's the easier fighter to use in this example. But you could use it with Dawkins or whoever. Oh yeah, Dawkins, I heard, is a pain in the ass behind the scenes, and they just want to get rid of him. They'd rather give him the loss, that type of stuff. So that's why you really don't want UFC officials to be a part of that. And Bergliotta even called on Ratner one other time, but Ratner didn't come over. He said, Mr. Ratner, you know, and Herb kept pulling him aside. He has a great resource in Herb Dean. He himself is a great referee. They got enough to figure it out amongst themselves. And I think in the end, they did the right thing. Now, some people were saying, well, what about a finger poke and a kick on the balls? Well, yeah, but you're given time to recover. They usually pull the fighters apart, and they're given time to recover to see if they can go on. And if they can't, then they go to and rule whether it was intentional and someone needs to be disqualified, or whether it was accidental, and then they rule it a no contest, unless it's a fight that goes to the third round in a non-title fight or the fourth round in a title fight, in which they go to the judges' scorecards. But we were only in round one, and the time to recover wasn't given. Now, here's another thing I'll say, and I'm not trying to shit on anyone. It all happened so fast. I would be frightful to ever be in that situation. But Mergliotto, when it happened and he kind of had to get out of the way, he kind of had to do this funny little step over. And so in that moment, when Holland hit the ground, it looked like it was arm first and then head. And then he turned around. Dacus was mauling him so quick, goes. His arms and legs were just kind of up in the air. And because he's long and wiry, I think he just tangled up Dacus. Then Dacus almost tried to bull his legs over and flip him over himself. So in that process, I think that's kind of what brought Kevin Holland back, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Because if when their heads collided, if Dacus would have just stood back and Kevin Holland fell, I bet you if Kevin Holland tried to get up, he probably would have either stumbled or not been able to. And then you would have said, oh, that's a fighter that's hurt. You know, maybe I just wave it off or whatever. I don't think he would have got up and started juggling or doing a tightrope act or anything like that. He wouldn't have had his balance. But because the fight continued and fighters train to fight in those situations, you know, when they're super tired, they try and mimic a fighter that's in duress. I think that's basically what happened in that. And so when Mergliotto was saying he was fighting back, he wasn't really fighting back. He was surviving. And then after a few seconds, he was then, first of all, he was getting attacked. Then I think he started surviving. And then I think he came back too. But all of that was because Dacus was all over him, you know, which I give Kevin Holland a credit to. Now he knows that under duress, he's a pretty damn good fighter. But in the end, you know, he did give up his neck and he did get submitted. And it looked to his credit like he was willing to take the loss like a man. He looked disappointed when they announced it. And, I think that was just the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, when it's all said and done, it's going down the way it needs to go down. It's just the execution of everything was a little off for me. And I don't know that Kevin Holland, if Dan Mergliotta saw him go down because of a headbutt the way he did, then I felt like the action should have been stopped at that moment. Whether he was able to fight back or not, I think it just should have been stopped.
I agree. All right, so that was the co-main event. And now let's talk about the other fights on the main card. Nico Price defeated Alex Oliveira. I thought it was 1-1 going into round three. And I thought Oliveira had the momentum going into round three. But Nico Price dug deep, and he pulled out that fight in the last couple minutes. So he got the well-deserved win against Alex Oliveira. Christoph John, and then he called out somewhere along the line. He said he'd love to fight Nick Diaz. And I just don't see Diaz wanting to take that fight. It's no disrespect against Price. He's a veteran. He's been in the sport for a while, but he doesn't have that name power that I think the Diaz brothers look for. The Diaz brothers don't even care about wins and losses so much or even titles. They just care about who's the other party, you know, and are you going to get me out of bed, that type of thing. I'm not sure Nico Price does that, but we'll see. Stranger things have happened.
Yeah. That was a good fight. The call out doesn't make much sense. You know, it's weird. We always talk about this, but the gambling aspect, mm-hmm. I had all my plays ready to go, but because I was across state lines, I couldn't place them, and I would have went 5-0. And that was one of them.
But there's other ways to get out of state line, other out of state plays in.
Yeah, it was just quick. It all happened so quick, and I was just, all right.
All right. Christoph Jocko defeated Misha Cirkunov. Split decision there. That one got a little heated. I think, let me see if I recall, Jocko thought that Cirkunov was exaggerating. What was it? A clash of heads, a kick in the balls, an eye poke, something. I can't remember, but do you remember?
I thought it was an eye poke, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I think he said he hit him with the knuckle. Oh, man, I'm spacing it now. But, yeah, Jocko was like, come on, let's go, you know. And Cirkunov had dropped from 205 to 185, and he came in good shape. And, you know, it was a winnable fight for him, but Jocko got the W, and that was that. But that was a little bit of drama there at the end. Alexander Hernandez blasted Mike Breeden, who stepped in on late notice. KO punch there, like a minute 20 in. That was a nice way to start the main card. So congratulations to Alexander Hernandez. On the prelims, Jared Gordon defeated Joe Selecki, split decision there. Casey O'Neill defeated Antonina Shevchenko, TKO stoppage in round two. Carol Rosa defeated Betch Correa, unanimous decision across the board, pretty dominant. Betch Correa retired after the fight. Jamie Mullarkey defeated Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith was putting it on him, and then Mullarkey turned it around in round two. Douglas Silva D'Andrade defeated Gaetano Perello, KO punch in round one. Stephanie Egger defeated Shanna Young, TKO, a stoppage in round two. And Alejandro Perez defeated Johnny Eduardo, submission, scarf hold, arm lock in round two. I believe Johnny Eduardo may have retired as well after his fight. The bonuses went to no fight of the night, all performance of the night bonuses, Casey O'Neill, Jamie Mullarkey, Douglas Silva D'Andrade, and Alejandro Perez. So pretty much goes all undercard fighters there in terms of the bonuses. That'll definitely please former co-host Dan Tom. He always loved it when they sprinkled some of that dough to the younger fighters, you know, where it can be way, way more meaningful. But overall, fun card. I did pretty good on the gambling side of it. And I could have done a little bit better, but I got sidetracked with a couple fights. But still, I was pleased, man.
I always wonder about the bonuses. Like, if you look at Hernandez and what he did, when he goes backstage, what do you, like, if you go up to the matchmakers and say, why didn't I get the bonus? Like, what could I have done better? There really is no answer. It's almost like sometimes when you're that destructive that early, it almost weighs against you when it comes bonus time.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of is Dana White once gave away five bonuses. That would have been a good time to do it. Mm-hmm. Or Dana White just goes out of his way to say, I'm going to take care of fill in the blank. I mean, Hernandez has struggled with weight in the past. But as far as I know, that didn't happen in this fight. So, or wait, it did happen in this fight, right?
Oh, is that what it was?
We did a little bit over.
Well, Aspen Ladd had her problems.
Yeah, you know what? It was Alexander. That's right. Alexander Hernandez goes, did we over? Sorry, no. It was Breeden that weighed over and Correa that weighed over. They got 20% each.
Oh, okay.
Hernandez and Rosa did. So, no. Yeah, it wasn't his fault. It was Breeden's fault. But Breeden took the fight on late notice. He's the one that weighed in at 158.5. So, yeah, you know, he was definitely eligible. He's had a problem, I think, in the past. But for the most part, he was good on this fight. He deserved it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was your UFC card. Next week, meaning this upcoming Saturday, they're back at the Apex. And the main event has Mackenzie Dern versus Marina Rodriguez, Randy Brown versus Jared Gooden, Tim Elliott versus Matthias Nicolau, Sabrina Matzo versus Maria Agapova, Phil Haas versus Deron Wynn. That's your main card. I like that Alexander Romanov. He's down in the prelims. I'm definitely wanting to watch that. But yeah, this isn't the sexiest card when it comes to star power, name power, the rankings work I'll have to put in over the weekend. But that doesn't mean that it's not an opportunity for you to make some money betting. And I'm talking about it. Everyone's talking about gambling. There's a lot of gambling shows now on ESPN. There's a lot of gambling podcasts. Look at the spotlight they put on Gianni the Greek and Nick Kalikas. And, you know, it's – let me tell you something, folks. It's like drinking. You don't want to overdo it. It's a vice, but it does add to the fights. So I'll just say that. It doesn't mean that it's not a good opportunity to make some money just because the fight cards might not be as sexy as you want it, you know. So that's up to you. But those are the results from this past weekend. Anything you want to add goes to these results from either fight card?
I thought Jared Gordon dug deep in his fight. That was fun, and he had a nice little call out at the end. So that was a fun little exchange.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's talk about some of the latest news that's out there, man. John Jones, you want to start with that? I believe we've talked about it, but since then, a police report came out that detailed more of the facts. It wasn't some stripper leaving him and his friend's bachelor party. That was a position we gave of, you know, what it could be. You hold the stripper's hand. Come on, you need to leave now? What if we give you another $100? You know, could that be a misdemeanor versus the felony of actually putting hands on her? You know, could it have been someone else, some chick at a club? Or, you know, we didn't know any details. And now we know that it was his fiance. His daughters were present in the room. The fiance was bleeding from her lip and from her nose. She was scared. She wanted to go to another room. She also led them to believe that it wasn't the first time John, you know, gets mad. So we know, we saw the police report. We know who it involved. And then even after that, they are already showing affection on social media. Hey, you know, through thick and thin, good and bad. And so I guess they're maybe repairing the image out there a little bit. So a lot has happened. What are your thoughts?
Man, the second I read, you know, the thing about the blood and going back and finding blood and all that, like, I felt so bad that that's just something that cannot happen. And then just taking his head and slamming it into a car like that, like, it just comes down to your everyday attitude towards life. There's something in a lot of us that just says, that's a bad idea. You know, when you think something crazy, don't do that. That's bad. There are repercussions. For him to be this far into his life, having suffered the things that he suffers from, and still get to that point and go, nah, this is a good idea, that's just bad news. Really, really bad news, because he's had so many wake-up calls. I am no saint. Maybe one day I'm going to do something really dumb, but I promise you it would not happen again. I would feel so bad putting my friends and family through that issue with me that I would never make those mistakes again. But to constantly do it, the only word I can think of, man, is selfish. It's just really, really selfish. And it sucks that it keeps happening over and over to a human being that has incredible talent.
Yeah, and I didn't fill in the blank, so thank you for doing that. There was the felony charge of destruction of a police vehicle. And again, we didn't know what it was, and Goes is right. In the process of getting booked and arrested, John Jones, I guess, headbutted the police car. So it caused, I guess, $5,000 in damage. Now, this stuff, that will probably get pled down, I imagine. I don't know what will happen with the fiance, because even if she chooses not to go through with the charges, I think many states, many DAs will just do it anyway. So we'll see what happens there. And then the whole other conversation is, what's the UFC going to do? Because remember, when Dana White was first asked about this, he said, let's see what the facts are, what the details are. I don't want to comment until then. Well, now we know some more details and facts. And so in that process where he headbutted the car, according to the police report, John Jones went from cooperative to a little ornery to just outright dumb. At one point, wondering out loud if the cops that were there could take John Jones, and then him laughing it off. I would say immature again. And I don't even think you talk about that. You know, even if the cops are as cool as can be, your best bet is to just keep your mouth shut, you know, and start the process of getting your lawyer, I guess, or whatever. But all that stuff's going to get written down in the police report. It's going to get dissected by people like myself and Goes and the fans. And you shouldn't wonder about challenging authority or whatever. They're there only because you fucked up, you know. And the rest of it, ask, you know, you can ask them anything you want, but don't say that to them. And that's not even the big deal. The big deal was he struck allegedly his fiance. She bled. The daughter was so scared that she said, can you call the cops? I mean, well, come on. This is a mess. So that part is going to be sorted out by the law, honestly. But the one thing that we can opine on is the UFC. They have this code of conduct. What are they going to do? More details are out. Chael Sonnen has said they're almost better off not cutting him so that they can control him. I get where Chael was headed with that. I don't know if you saw that video. Mm-hmm. But I would disagree. I feel like that's still part of the enabling process. It's not the UFC's duty to control him. It's his own duty to control himself. And whether he's going to go out and make money for Triller, if Triller decides they want to sign him, or, you know, another, you know, celebrity boxing promoter, a boxing promoter, another MMA promoter, you know, that shouldn't be the UFC's business. The UFC's business should be, you know, we're the NFL of MMA, and we have the best athletes, but we also don't have domestic abusers on our roster. You know, they probably will wait to see if charges are filed and the DA takes the case and that he's convicted of it. And then I think at that point, their hands will be tied. But I really feel like until that happens, goes, they're not going to cut him. And that's the part that disappoints me, because the facts are kind of there and they're not explicit. They're not explicit in terms of, you know, he threw a right hand and it connected with my nose. They're not that, but he grabbed her by the hair. You know, it's all there in the police report. If you go to MMA Junkie, it's ugly.
Very ugly.
Yeah. All right. What did you think of Conor McGregor posting part of his contract that showed he got 1.5 million pay-per-views, an extra 4,000 than what was estimated? But regardless, us getting the information that him and Dustin Poirier sold 1.5 million pay-per-views, it's an impressive number. It definitely doesn't break the record, which is held by him and Khabib Nurmagomedov at 2.4 million. It doesn't even break the number that stood for a long time, which was UFC 100, 1.6 million. But it's up there. It's probably in the top five. We also don't know how much was Conor McGregor's cut, but he kind of, you know, he kind of threw some numbers out there.
It's impressive. I just don't understand. I don't think his employer is going to be very happy about that. He's had that problem before, you know, posting text messages of Dana White. That's only going to make the situation worse for him, I think. But I don't know. That's kind of par for the course with this guy at this point. So I do think it's very impressive, though, that he was able to do that with that fight, him and Dustin Poirier.
Well, Dana White said, here's one thing he said that doesn't apply to Conor McGregor. He goes, the reason we don't discuss it, it's because it's none of your business, meaning media, fans, anybody that's inquiring. He goes, and these fighters don't want you to know. But guess what? Conor craves going after that Forbes list. He finally got to be number one, and he bragged about how much that number was. I don't think he cares if you know that his half a billion empire is attributed to this much from whiskey, this much from fighting, this much from other opportunities, business opportunities or endorsements. I really don't care. I really don't think he cares if you know that he got paid, we'll say $20 million for the Dustin Poirier fight, or $19 million. I mean, the only thing that's going to do is help out other fighters, but I really don't think Conor McGregor cares. I don't, you know, the excuse that Dana White uses is that if others find out what you're making, they're going to want to hang on. He calls them hang-arounds, you know, and hang-arounds, and they're going to want to nip at you and get some of that. And that's why the athletes shouldn't tell everybody what they make. But yet in other sports, we know to the dime what other athletes make. You know, do they have hang-arounds? How do they figure it out? And it's a lot more money than what MMA fighters are doing. The reason he wants to keep it a secret is because he doesn't want you to know how much the UFC makes, you know, and doesn't share with their athletes. But this is where I go to bat for him, is if he would just come to grips with saying, this is a sport where we don't have to go 50-50, because even though the athletes are the sport, they're interchangeable. You know, it's the UFC's platform that allows these athletes to become stars. But without us, they're not as successful. We don't necessarily need them like other sports need their stars. Like the way the NFL goes out of their way to protect quarterbacks, they need those valuable quarterbacks. We don't have 32 great quarterbacks. That's why every team doesn't have a great quarterback. But in MMA, Conor McGregor doesn't have to fight for the next 2 years, and the UFC is still going to make bank, you know? So that's the part that's the little secret sauce. Six people in the world know what Coca-Cola's all about, or only the Colonel knows about them 11 herbs and spices, that type of secret. You know, that's what Dana White knows and doesn't want you to know. And that's where he technically is right. You know, he doesn't really have to pay some of these guys more money. And that's why he says, if you want to fight, I'm booking fights every Saturday night. Let me know. But otherwise, he ain't sweating. He ain't tripping.
True. Yeah.
And he can just go, so-and-so just didn't want to fight when we wanted them to fight. So we're doing an interim fight. He doesn't even care about what you think about the interim fight anymore. You know, before I think he thought like, oh, man, I'm going to look so stupid. What am I going to say? Now I think he just doesn't care. He didn't want to fight. We got to create an interim fight. But he just won it 2 months ago. Well, he didn't want to fight. So we got to create the interim fight. Okay. And you can push and shove. But guess what? The press conference is over. The weigh-ins are the next day. The fights happened. The night of fighting was great. And then we turn the page to the next event. What are we going to do? Sit there and say, but he hasn't fought 2 months ago. But he hasn't fought 2 months and a week ago. But he hasn't fought 2.5 months ago. Doesn't matter. It's all in the past. And they move on and they move on. He only has to face the music one time real quick. And then they move on. It's just something we've gotten used to. You know what I mean?
It's all dollars and cents. This is just really what it comes down to for those guys.
Yeah. What did you think of this fight card that went by? It had no Aspen Ladd and AC Chasson. It definitely could have used two more stars on the card. Aspen Ladd didn't make weight. And she had a really, really scary incident on the scale. She was shaking. I'll give her this. She took it on the chin, was very professional, apologetic when she needed to be. And I don't know, you know, what's going to happen, if they're going to rebook them or not. But apparently, there was still an opportunity where Chasson could have taken the fight, and she declined. So two things. Should the commission have allowed that to get to that point after seeing what Aspen Ladd went to? And the next thing is, what did you think of Misha Tate then coming out and saying, you know, saying what she said, that she was unprofessional, she thinks she was all of 139. And that Aspen Ladd was even trying to cheat with the way she was standing on the scale. With, you know, they have that little curtain around them.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone involved should have not allowed her to fight. Coaches, the UFC, the commission. That didn't look good at all, healthy at all. So, yeah, I agree with her not fighting that night. It just looked really, really, really bad. And I know Aspen came out and said why she believes she didn't make weight. It's just not a good look. I mean, she kind of said everything herself. And as far as Misha's comments, you know, they have a little bit of history. Those two, they haven't fought yet, but they apparently came close to doing it at one point. And it's building up to a fight, you know, them too. And I actually think it's a very competitive and good fight. So we'll have to see how that goes down. But somebody like Misha Tate just has a little bit more gas to be able to say what they want because of the things that she's gone through in the sport and accomplished. You know, when certain people speak in the NFL, when Drew Brees says something, when Joe Montana says something, just carries more clout. And Misha's one of those people. When she says something, people are going to listen and people are going to take what she says seriously because of the way she has performed in her career.
Some people have said bump Ladd up to 145 and, you know, maybe the UFC should make a statement. But did Ladd show enough professionalism in her apology that you want to give her another chance at 135, maybe rebook Chasson and then work on the Tate fight later, or do you think it's actually a good idea?
I don't think it's a good idea. I think you put some kind of restrictions, like, you know, you got to spend some time out here at the UFCPI with some of our nutritionists and all that, and go through all this and figure this out if you want to do this again at 135, but definitely put it on the table. Like, this is your last chance here.
Yeah. Last chance in the UFC or last chance at 135?
135.
Yeah. Do you want to see them rebook to Chisson, or should she move on to Tate? Tate, by the way, still has her fight coming up against Ketlin Vera, so that's not going anywhere, but maybe they could meet down the road. So what do you prefer?
I think Macy Chisson. I think that should still happen, and then build up to that Tate fight.
Yeah. You know, it's weird because when you talk to managers and fighters, they make it sound like that stuff about them trembling on the scale is actually not as big of a deal as we make it out to be. All I need is a little bit of fluids and I'm fine. I can fight the next day. And you know what? Honestly, in a way, it's true. I've seen that happen where they have a scary incident, they have a rough weight cut, but once they're rehydrated, they're good to go. They're beasts, they're savages. But I'd like to know from the medical field, are the athletes correct? You know, where it was a close call, but with some rehydration, they are good to fight? Or hell no, they shouldn't be fighting because this is what they've done to their body. I would like to know from like maybe two or three opinions on that, definitive opinions, and see what they say. I mean, obviously, they're because the commission has doctors and they're clearing them to fight. So on the one hand, it's like, George, the answer's right there. You know, they're fighting, so obviously someone cleared them. And the people that care the most about them are usually their managers and trainers, and not just because they're getting compensation, but they really do care for each other as brothers or sisters in combat, or fathers and sons and daughters, you know. I don't know, I'm often confused by this.
It's trauma to your body. You know, that's your body's reaction to telling you something is wrong, right? Your body, your legs, your heart, they can't speak. So that's their way of letting you know something is really, really wrong here. It needs to be addressed. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible the next day everything, the ship writes itself. But I still feel like there's a little bit of trauma done to your body when you do those types of things, to your organs and all that. Just because you're okay today doesn't mean you're going to be okay down the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's like steroids, well, right? You take steroids, yeah, you're going to be tough and strong right now. But what happens later in life? What did you do to your body, right? Every right. Dark Side of the Ring episode we see, somehow that kind of has a play in it with all these pro wrestlers that have passed away early. Guys that we look at and just go, man, they're in shape. They look great. But look what they did to their body. It worked at that time, but later on it caught up to them. I think weight cutting is the same thing. You know, when you're putting your kidneys and stuff like that through that, I think you're shaving time.
Okay. Moving on. It's official. Aljamain Sterling is not only out of his fight, but the Peter Yan replacement is Corey Sandhagen, and they will be fighting for the interim title in Abu Dhabi. What are your thoughts on I don't think anyone has a problem. If someone can't go, they can't go. Whether Jan predicted it or not, and whether Jan wants to clown on him or not, that's fine. But should Corey Sandhagen have been the one that has stepped up to fight for an interim title when he just finished losing to TJ Dillashaw? And to be fair, TJ Dillashaw can't go because he's injured. But Rob Font, excuse me. Rob Font would have been somebody coming off a win who is highly thought of, who's in the top five. He would have made a ton of sense. He's got a fight booked against Jose Aldo, not too far away. Maybe they went to him, maybe they didn't. But what did you think of this?
He was a guy that I instantly thought of because I don't know that under any circumstance. I agree, an interim title, this is when it actually makes sense. This is why it was created. But somebody coming in off a loss, no matter how close that fight was, to me doesn't make sense when you have somebody coming off a win. And Rob Vaughn, I think, would have been probably pretty good for that scenario to slip him in. Now, there are plenty of scenarios where maybe that didn't happen. Maybe they asked him and he said no. You know, maybe he asked for something else, more money, more time. I get all that. But coming off of a loss, I think, doesn't really make sense getting a title shot.
Yeah.
I think Rob would have been the good selection there.
Can I give you a homework assignment? I know you know that camp pretty well. Will you reach out and see if they tell you what happened?
Yeah.
I'd like to know because he's fighting Jose Aldo, I believe, in December. And it could be that he just wouldn't have been ready in enough time or maybe wouldn't have been able to get cleared to go to Abu Dhabi. Maybe there's a lot of reasons that we don't know. And if you eliminate Rob Font, then it could be that the UFC was kind of like not left with many names and they really wanted to have, you know, this title fight. So their hand was forced, their hands were tied, whatever you want to call it. That actually may be the case. Font and Aldo, by the way, were fighting December 4th. And this event, the one in Abu Dhabi, UFC 267, is on October 30th. So it's more than a month in advance. And with the travel, who knows, it may just not have been attractive to Rob Font. We'll see. Okay, they still have Teixeira and Blachowicz, and now they have Sterling and Yan. And speaking of fights that were made, we also move on to this one goes. Oliveira and Poirier are now official for UFC 269. UFC 269 has three title fights. So 267 has two title fights. 268 has one title fight. No, two title fights. Nama Yunus and Zhang. And Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington. Look at UFC 269. Oliveira versus Poirier, Nunes versus Pena, and Moreno versus Figueroa. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never really been a fan of that type of card. I never want to see more than two title fights on a card.
Me neither. In fact, if they could push Moreno into January, I guess, then maybe Askarov or someone else could go, or Juicy A Formiga, or I don't know. I mean, I just didn't want to see Figueroa again. That's the third time they fought each other, like back to back to back, like not even one little break. When Tim Sylvia and Andrei Arlovsky fought each other three times in 18 months, I think, or something like that, I think both guys actually took a fight in between before they actually got to the third one, and it was like shoved down our throats. But this one's being shoved down our throats, and I don't think we need it because we have candidates. It's just they may not have been ready. Excuse me, it may be Pantoja that I'm thinking about, not Formiga. I misspoke.
It's Pantoja.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, that fight set, it's going to happen in Las Vegas on December 11th. 269 is that fight card, and you know, just winding down here with some of the other latest news that's out there. Kevin Holland, you see, he was kind of a hero goes. I guess somebody alerted to a car that was being thieved, and he reacted and drove and then chased the guy down. You see that?
Yeah, put him in a lock and waited for police.
Kevin Holland is, you know, if he wasn't such a talker, which is kind of colorful, but I feel like, here's why it makes me mad is I bet on Kevin Holland. So when he's talking and not fighting, it makes me mad. But if I wasn't betting on him and I was just watching, I'd probably just laugh because I don't even know if you heard, but when he when Dawkins tried to take him down, DC said, oh, you know, that takedown defense with Johnny Hendricks is paying off or something. And Holland not only heard it, he spoke to DC. He goes, yeah, what about that takedown defense, DC? It's funny, it's colorful, but I want to see him getting underhooks and completely breaking away and striking again, not talking to DC. But I think, again, my frustration comes more from me just having money on the guy. But he really, really is something else. And then this little heroic act, good for Kevin Holland.
Yeah, I didn't catch that, but that's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, he was talking on two different occasions. I think another one was when he was on the ground. But if you watch the fight, there's a couple times where he was talking, and it was kind of hilarious. Remember, the Apex is fairly quiet. You know, I mean, they allow some VIPs in there from time to time, maybe some extras, you know, Vegas notables, but for the most part, it's like a contenders and it's fairly quiet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lastly, what was I going to say? Did you catch Khabib Nurmagomedov at Old Trafford? We got his number 7 jersey with the name Khabib. He got to meet Ronaldo and Pogba the night before. And then the next day he spotted at Liverpool versus Man City. And he said he was there to cheer on Man City. And I was like, oh, you're killing me. He told me personally his favorite team is Real Madrid. But he also told me that he prefers the Premier League. And his favorite team in the Premier League is Manchester United. You can't be having two favorite Premier League teams. You can have a La Liga team and a Premier League team. I get that. But, yeah, I once I saw him at Old Trafford, that's your squad, man. If you want to go the next day as a fan, okay. But he said he was there to support Man City. He kind of broke my heart.
Boy, that was a cool pick, though, huh, with Sir Alex Ferguson. And that was cool. That was a cool moment.
Yeah, BKFC had a tragedy. They lost a fighter that competed for them about a month ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Justin Thornton is his name. And he suffered a knockout loss to Dylan Kleckler in August. And he recently passed away. And so obviously, first of all, our thoughts and prayers go towards his family. Our deepest condolences. That's terrible, man. You know, it's something I was talking about recently in MMA, how it hasn't happened in the UFC. Thankfully, it has happened in MMA, but not in the UFC. Not that it matters where it happens. I'm just saying, because the biggest stage is the UFC. For many people, they think the sport is the UFC. They call it UFC. But in the UFC, that's yet to happen. We've often said it's just a matter of time before it happens because it's so prevalent in boxing and many other combat sports. But BKFC hasn't been around that long ago, and I don't know. I kind of felt really, really bad for everyone involved. I don't think it'll set the promotion back a little bit, but because it's so raw, you know, I just wonder if maybe commissions will put a halt to its growth. Maybe it won't get sanctioned in certain states, or maybe they'll alter the rules. Or, you know, they're probably going to investigate this a little bit, I imagine.
Yeah, I think that's because it's so new, you know, for this to happen. Because this could very easily happen in mixed martial arts. If you go back and you see the fighter's history, he's had a couple knockouts, you know, before, bad ones. It's very unfortunate. I feel really bad that, you know, somebody has to go through that, everything that happened. And, you know, I think he was kind of in a coma for about a month. Mm-hmm. And so that's rough. And I think maybe something like that will happen. But I think the sport will maybe get a little backlash for a little bit. And then I think things will just go back to normal. I mean, boxing, this happens quite regularly. I think it's the last stat that I remember was 2 times a year. So not much has really changed in boxing except for the rounds, you know.
Earlier in the year, he fought MMA promoter Lex McMahon. Mm-hmm. This fight only lasted 18 seconds. He took one shot and fell, and then he had to be stretchered out. Like you said, he was in a coma for a while. And, you know, could this have been obviously damage that was carried over from previous fights? I won't even just say the McMahon fight, but other fights as well. He was only 8-16. Should he have even been sanctioned for more combat sports at this point? You know, like, you know, I don't think that BKFC needed a. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what his boxing background is. I can't say anything. For all I know, he may have been Golden Gloves, right? He may have lost by submission in his MMA fights. But I think this is going to be investigated, and we need to find out. You know what happened here.
That's probably the change that I would imagine will come down, is sanctioning fights, right? But look at this guy's record versus this guy's record. I think that's where maybe they'll take a harder stance on something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, Justin Thornton, a nice statement was made out from BKFC in regards to focusing on his passing and expressing thoughts and condolences there. And when we find out more about what's going to happen, what kind of an investigation there'll be, and what maybe else BKFC might further have to say, you know, we'll definitely pass it on. And just, I don't know, sad way to end the show, I guess. But it happened. Well, you know what? Let's end with this. A lot of fighters like Israel Adesanya and Dan Hooker and I think Alexander Volkanovski are now saying they may move to the United States because of the strict COVID laws, quarantining before you leave, quarantining when you come back, getting the visa to get out. You know how Dan Hooker had all them problems getting in here in time for the Nasrat Haqparast fight? Well, guess what, Ghost? Quick turnaround. He's fighting on that fight card that Aljamain Sterling is out of, the one in Abu Dhabi. He's fighting Islam Makhachev. So on the one hand, I'm happy because they gave him a quality opponent. You know, he has to travel around the world to get there on short notice. Hopefully he leveraged it and is getting paid handsomely for it. But Makhachev's a beast, man. You know what I mean? He didn't take – I don't consider that he took much damage in the Haqparast fight because he was usually the guy in control. But what did you think of that? Let's close with that.
I like the fact that he's able to do that and collect two paychecks because what he's had to go through in the last couple fights with travel and all that. And then don't forget that long quarantine, you know. Like, remember the video of him being able to see his child but not touch her? Like, that's just so much for them to go through. So I'm glad that he got this opportunity and make some money.
I agree. Huge for Dan Hooker. And, you know, it saves that fight card a little bit.
Do you need to stop and get that Uber Eats? Who was that jabroni that just walked by?
No, that was the host of the house that I'm staying at here in Tustin, California. Okay. That was a big row.
Okay.
All right. So let's get going. Look, thank you all so much for the kind messages we both received during our birthday vacations. And I even posted something. I don't know if you saw it. Goes, that was an international podcast day. I didn't even know it. So I just threw up a picture of our first show and just said, hey, look, you know, I guess we're part of this thing. So happy International Podcast Day. And then we got some really, really nice comments. I've yet to reply to them, but I will. But happy belated International Podcast Day, goes.
Yeah, same.
All right, folks. We'll see you all on Thursday. This one may have come late, but the next one's going to come early. So we'll see you soon. In the meantime, go out there and be a champion.